You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis.
If I could be the wealthy owner of a large industry, I would say, not for me. I'd rather lead a band. If I could be a politician with a chance to dictate, I would say, let it wait, I'd rather lead a band. I'm rich as old Croesus, my every care ceases when I've got 10 pieces in hand. If I could have a millionaires with a whole flock of banks, I would just whisper thanks. I'd rather lead a band. A saxophone, a slide trombone, a bass, fiddle, and a drum. A guy at the piano who makes it hum.
That was the title track from Loudon Wainwright III's new album, I'd Rather Lead a Band, performed with Vince Giordano and the Nighthawks. The tune originated from the classic 1936 Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movie Follow the Fleet, with words and music by one of the all-time greatest American songwriters, Irving Berlin. Some of you younger listeners might not know that name. In fact, he stopped writing music long before even I was born. But if you've been singing or listening to Happy Holidays or White Christmas this season, then you're well acquainted with the songs of Irving Berlin. Others include God Bless America, There's No Business Like Show Business, Puttin' on the Ritz, Blue Skies, and Cheek to Cheek, just to name a few. Standards that have stood the test of time and crossed generations. Songs that make a person say they don't write them like they used to. And precisely the kind of songs I like to hear when I ring in the new year. Nothing sets the mood as the clock approaches midnight like dancing to the sounds of a big band playing those old familiar tunes from the Great American Songbook. Sadly, with restaurants closed and gatherings banned, this New Year's Eve will be a little less festive than usual, but you can still set the mood and maybe even cut a rug to the jaunty and romantic tunes of Berlin, Rodgers and Hart, Johnny Mercer, and others with Loudon Wainwright and Vince Giordano's delightful new record. Loudon Wainwright III is a popular Grammy-winning folk singer, songwriter, humorist, and occasional actor who's famous for his confessional style and wry wit with songs like Dead Skunk and for his 24 albums, including his soundtrack for the Judd Apatow movie Knocked Up. Vince Giordano is a saxophonist and leader of the Nighthawks Orchestra, which has faithfully been recreating the sounds of the 1920s and 30s for more than 4 decades now, in live performances and movies and television shows like The Aviator and Boardwalk Empire. Today they both join me on the show to talk about their deep affection for the music of the Great American Songbook and some of their favorite recordings from I'd Rather Lead a Band. Loudon recalls fond memories of his father playing these songs on the family record player when he was just a little boy, and Vince remembers the legendary jazz arranger who took him under his wing as a teenager and inspired his lifelong passion for keeping this music alive. Plus, they reveal what they're doing to keep busy now that the pandemic has prevented them from touring and performing, and how they find solace and a few laughs during these troubled times in the hopeful music of the Great Depression, and the bawdy lyrics of a rather tragic ukulele player who became the voice of Walt Disney's Jiminy Cricket. Coming up with Loudon Wainwright III and Vince Giordano in just a moment. Today I'm joined by singer-songwriter Loudon Wainwright III and bandleader, arranger, musician Vince Giordano, who recently collaborated together on a new album that celebrates the music of the 1920s and 30s. The album is called I'd Rather Lead a Band. Vince and Loudon, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here.
Good to be here, Ben. Thank you.
Well, guys, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've already listened to this album. I have relatively obscure tastes in music to begin with, and it only gets more obscure the older I get. So the 20s and 30s really are the sweet spot for me these days. Plus, just these songs are so joyful and heartfelt. It's just really a delightful pick-me-up just when we need it right now. But if I have this right, you guys recorded this well before quarantine, right?
As I recall, we recorded it in September, or the end of August and September of 2019. And then it came out about a year later. So we recorded it before the shit hit the fan.
How did the two of you come together on this album? What's the origin of this collaboration?
Well, I usually handle this one, don't I, Vince?
Oh, you want me to do it?
Well, I'm walking along the street and I bumped into a strange man. No, Vince and I have worked together thanks to our mutual friendship and working relationship with Randall Poster and Stuart Lerman. Those guys mm-hmm. work together and do music for movies and TV. And Vince and I worked together first in 2004 on a Scorsese movie called The Aviator. And then we did some music for a few episodes of Boardwalk Empire. And what happened was that Randy and Stuart said, you guys, meaning me and Vince, should make a whole record together. And lo and behold, it actually happened.
Yeah, and it's just terrific. And I have to say, I was also a big fan of Boardwalk Empire, so I loved all the music on there. And in all of Scorsese's movies, whether it's The Aviator, Boardwalk Empire, Casino, Goodfellas, The Irishman, it's always very clear that a lot of thought goes into the music for those movies, and specifically songs that evoke that sense of time and place. Vince, what was it like to be able to work with him and recreate the music of the 20s and 30s for those projects?
It was fantastic. It was my own little personal time machine. On set and seeing the attention to detail that Scorsese brings to everything that's going around. You know, if anything, everybody checking. And of course, the music is so important to me. I've been keeping the music of the 20s alive for 40 years now, and even longer than it was. So to get called to do this and be part of it was really a dream come true.
Yeah, I know that you've been playing these songs for decades with your band, the Nighthawks, but Loudon, this album is a bit of a departure from your usual style. What made you want to reach deep into the great American songbook?
You know, my dad had a great record collection, and there were a lot of jazz stuff, you know, Dixieland, bebop, the American songbook, great singers like Ella Fitzgerald and Sinatra and Fred Astaire. So as a kid growing up, I was exposed to this stuff and delighted in his delight. You know, I observed how much he loved it. And I think that kind of got me hooked. And then as a young man, I started to, write my own songs. They kind of come up more out of a folk music tradition, you know, a guy with mm-hmm. a guitar. But I've always had a great fondness and respect for the songwriters of this era and certainly the singers and the wonderful bands and arrangers. So I was delighted to get to do this with Vince. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and as a fan, I appreciate that you let the orchestration sort of speak for themselves, and then you do you. You don't attempt to, you know, boom, do Bing Crosby or an Eddie Cantor impression. Was that always sort of the intention, to stay true to your own voice within that realm of jazz and big band?
Yeah, I think it would have been a mistake to do an imitation of a big band singer. I mean, right. I wouldn't believe there are people that can do better imitations of Bing Crosby, certainly, than I can. So really, I just sang the songs, and you know, and tried to infuse some kind of a sense of what the emotional life of the song was as I perceived it. But that's all I did, really, is I just sang them in my own voice.
And like you said a moment ago, you're best known as a folk singer, the guy with the guitar. But I find it interesting that you cut an entire album of jazz, because I've noticed over the past 5 or 10 years, we've seen this huge explosion of roots revival music, which goes back to these earliest forms of American music, blues, jazz, folk, bluegrass, jug bands. And it sort of mixes them up and combines genres, which no one has really done prior to now. It's sort of a perfect timing for this album, I think.
Yeah, that's for sure. I've been waiting for this renaissance.
Yeah.
Because when I first started playing this music, you know, people say, do you really want to be doing this? You know, you could be, you know, playing an electric bass and keep playing top 40 things. And I said, I know, but this is my calling. And this is what I love to do. Having Loudon with his ideas and his spin, they're unique. They're really unique performances. I mean, the songwriters are represented, and the orchestrations, but we have a brand new product of this wonderful music, and not really being nostalgia like some people do that.
Yeah, and if I have this right, Vince, your history with this era in music goes much farther back, I think even to your teens or younger. How did you first become interested in the songs of the 20s and 30s?
Well, my grandmother had a fantastic collection of Victrola records and an old wind-up machine, which I was allowed to use. And I started when I was 5 years old. So I was this weird young kid who couldn't wait to go home to watch the Warner Brothers black and white cartoons and Betty Boop and Laurel and Hardy and the Little Rascals. And I'm sort of an older, weird guy.
Yeah, those old Betty Boop cartoons, they had some great music, Cab Calloway and all these great jazz artists.
Yeah, they were far out. We often wonder what those artists were smoking or drinking in the studio.
Yeah, I think some of those are banned or were banned.
Yes, some of them are just very, very strange.
And I understand, Vince, that you took music lessons from Bill Challis, who was the arranger for Paul Whiteman, Bix Beiderbecke, and wrote arrangements for Tommy Dorsey and basically every major big band of that era. That must have been invaluable for you to have that direct connection to the music and the musicians you were so passionate about.
Oh, most definitely. I was a teenager and I was bold and I just wrote him a letter. He lived on Long Island in Massapequa, and my dad would have to drive me there, because I had no driver's license, I was too young. And we had an hour of music theory and about 2 hours of talking about people that he worked with, like Crosby and Don Redman and the Casaloma Band and all the other artists you mentioned. And he gave me a lot of great history and a lot of insights on how the music could be and what to watch out for. Sure enough, I cherished his advice in many, many different ways.
One thing that I'm curious about, whether you're doing Boardwalk Empire or doing an album like this, the arrangements seem incredibly authentic to the period when I listen to them. And I'm curious if you're actually using original arrangements or if they're your own arrangements or maybe some hybrid in between.
Yes, they are the original arrangements. I have a collection of about 60,000 arrangements that I've accumulated over the past 40 years. And we're always reaching out for more. The Blackbirds and Bluebirds chart that we did came from the original Whiteman collection up that's housed in Williams College, penned out by a fellow named Lenny Hayton, who went on to do bigger and better things. But that was the first time that arrangement was ever recorded. It was played and probably played on radio and concert gigs that Whiteman did, but it was a real revelation to hear what he did with that song. And I make a little adaptations. I listen to other recordings and sort of borrow some ideas to jazz things up a bit.
Yeah, I love that song. And again, it's called So the Bluebirds and the Blackbirds Got Together. Now let's listen to a bit from that track.
Look at my doorstep, look at my doorstep, look at the blackbirds, look at the bluebirds, look at the bad luck, look at the good luck there. Never saw bluebirds mingle with blackbirds, never saw bluebirds doing things backwards, never knew good luck ever would perch with care. I overheard those birdies talking today, and now I know just why they're acting this way. First the bluebird said, we've gotta have sunny weather. So the bluebirds and the blackbirds got together. Then the blackbird said, we're birds of a different feather. So the bluebirds and the blackbirds got together. And when they talked it over, they let the blackbirds bring rain. And all the bluebirds then agreed to bring the sunshine again. For we can't have rain or sunshine that lasts forever. So the bluebirds and the blackbirds got together.
Boy, what a happy little ditty that was. And the original recording features a very young Bing Crosby, right? Back when he was a part of the vocal group that performed with Whiteman. I think they were called the Rhythm Boys, right?
Yeah, the Rhythm Boys. It was Bing Crosby and Al Rinker and Harry Barris, who wrote some neat things like I Surrendered Here and Your Troubles. And they were really hot stuff. I mean, you can see them in some films like The King of Jazz, and they made a couple of short subjects that they show up in. And they were just wild and crazy guys who were just fantastic. And of course, Bing, you know, got bigger and he left and everyone else went their separate ways.
Yeah. Well, what a cheerful little song. I don't know why, but I feel like in the 20s, there were a lot of songs about birds. I think one of my favorite is a song called My Canary Has Circles Under Its Eyes, which is all about a guy's canary sneaking out at night and getting wasted.
Yes.
Every night.
Yes. There's a story behind that. Jimmy Van Heusen played that on a high school radio station, that exact song, and got him thrown off the air.
And now some of these songs on this album are ones that listeners might recognize, like Ain't Misbehavin' or You Rascal You. And then there are some that really are lost gems as well. It must have made for a fun research project when you guys are looking for songs to include on this. Tell us about that process, Loudon.
Well, Randy and Stuart and I and Vince, you know, there was just a lot of back and forth between song ideas and sending YouTube clips and MP3s. I mean, we whittled it down to 14 songs, but we listened to hundreds of songs. I'm not quite sure how we wound up with the 14. I think we cut 16 and chose 14, but it was just a kind of question, a process of elimination, I suppose, or what felt good. And that's how we did it pretty much.
Yeah, Loudon, these songs, they're an interesting contrast to your own compositions, because you're famous for your humorous confessional songs that talk about family, aging, politics, etc. But the songs on I'd Rather Lead a Band, they really speak to fundamental truths, basic needs and emotions, love, heartbreak, joy, desire. You know, it's easy to see why these have stood the test of time. Does it make you want to now go back and try your hand at writing a great American standard?
No. I think, you know, I'm going to continue to do what I do, you know, that's fine. I mean, the songs, you know, but if you mention, you know, family or dysfunction or sadness or ribald, is that how you pronounce it? Ribald,
right.
obscene humor. I mean, I have that in my song bag, and, you know, Give It to Mary with Love, which is on this record, is a novelty song that I wish I'd written, you know, and I like to think that I might have been able to write that. So I think there are some similarities. And certainly when it came down to choose, you know, for me to make my choices about what I felt comfortable singing, you know, they were areas that were in my emotional wheelhouse, let's say.
Yeah, I want to spend a little time on that song. I'm going to give it to Mary with Love. Now, listeners can probably guess at the not-so-subtle innuendo there, but just in case, let's hear a little bit of it.
I'm going to give it to Mary with love. I've got something that she's fondest of. Now I know that she has had it before. And Mary's a gal that all the fellas adore. I'm gonna let her take it right in her hand, 'cause I know that she'll stroke it so grand. Like Jack and Jill, we'll both get a thrill when I give it to Mary with love. My little kitten, when I give it to Mary with love. I'm gonna give it to Mary with love. She's my sweet, cute turtle dove. How about my loving? She's always been keen. She says when I give it, it's the finest she's seen. She'll think of it long after I'm gone. I'm gonna put it right where it belongs. Like Cleo and Mark, we'll spoon in the park when I give it to Mary with love. I mean a necklace when I give it to Mary.
Again, that was I'm Gonna Give It to Mary with Love. Now, Loudon, was that a pretty risque song when it came out?
Well, Vince has the history of this, and I'm sure he can give a little thumbnail.
Yeah. Well, it was introduced by a guy named Cliff Edwards, who was known as Ukulele Ike, and it was actually a party record with no composer. We don't know really who composed the song. It was on a very obscure label called the Hollywood Hotshots. And Cliff Edwards was a superstar in his own right and sort of a wild man. And he'd go in and out of life, ups and downs, mostly downs. And this was probably, hey, I need some money. Let me cut this song. You know, he definitely had a wild side to him. And I think this is the first time that this song has been covered since 1935.
It seems like there were a lot of ukulele players who played very risque tunes with a lot of innuendo in the 20s. I want to say that George Frombie also had some songs that I've heard that were a little bit steamy.
Oh, yes. While I'm Washing Windows and there's the Chinese Laundry Blues.
Right.
Some of those songs were banned on the BBC, too. Push the envelope.
Yeah.
But they got an audience that way.
Yeah. Now, Ukulele Ike or Cliff Edwards, didn't he later have a career with Disney? I think he was the voice of Jiminy Cricket, right?
That's correct. When You Wish Upon a Star was his big hit. And I listen to that, you know, once in a while, and it's, it really knocks me out. Mm-hmm. But that you hear this fellow who's had drinking and smoking and, you know, major drugs, and he's singing so pure. You know,
yeah.
Wow.
He's angelic. Yeah, the other thing about him is he had a very dramatic, interesting life. And he was a very good actor. Just the other night, I was watching the Turner Classic Movie Channel, and His Girl Friday was on with Rosalind Russell and Cary Grant. And, you know, a lot of it takes place in the press room, a newspaper press room. And there are these kind of hardened, cynical reporters. And Cliff Edwards plays one of them. And as an actor, I think he was incredibly good. And he played a character called Endicott. But I couldn't take my eyes off him for the whole movie. I thought it was just great to see him act his ass off, really.
Yeah, and he had that, like you said, sort of a tragic story. I think, didn't he get buried in a pauper's grave and Disney had to pay for his headstone or something like that?
Yeah, Walt Disney probably enjoyed his work from the 20s. They're both of the same era. And probably Walt Disney bought those records, you know, the Ukulele Ike records, but they sort of rescued him from complete obscurity and they gave him a gravestone. And he did do a lot for the Disney company.
Yeah, I've actually seen that gravestone. It's in a cemetery in Burbank. And yeah, there are a lot of silent stars from the 20s buried there. And me and my wife, for some reason, we're attracted to cemeteries around here in L.A. because there's always someone interesting buried at every cemetery in L.A. And sometimes they'll be obscure. But I think that's the first time that I ever heard his name, because we're just walking around and, you know, when I see a gravestone that says, you know, Cliff Edwards, a.k.a. Ukulele Ike, how can I not go and Google that and find out who that guy was?
What's this about?
Yeah. I think the most famous person buried there was actually Oliver Hardy of the Laurel and Hardy shorts. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll return with more when we come back in just a moment. I want to ask you about the title track, I'd Rather Lead a Band. I remember this song from the Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movie, Follow the Fleet. Loudon, what attracted you to that one?
I think it was written, Irving Berlin wrote it for that movie. But the version that I heard that knocked me out and made me kind of pitch it to the group was Bunny Berrigan's version.
Oh, okay.
I think Fred Astaire, as great a singer as he was, and let's not even talk about his abilities as a dancer, but you know, if you listen to his version of I'd Rather Lead a Band, it's okay. But Bunny Berrigan's version is great, and our version is great too.
Yeah. Bunny Berrigan's fantastic. What is the famous song that he did?
I can't get started.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a classic.
We thought about doing I Can't Get Started, but then, you know, that rendition is you know, timeless, and
right.
you don't want to mess with it. So we ruled it out.
Well, we're in good company, because there was a lot of trumpet players like Louis Armstrong and Harry James that would not touch that song. They would say, that's Bunny Berrigan's. Let's pick another song.
Right. And once you get to the point where Rod Stewart is recording it, then it's sort of, you kind of feel like maybe it's sort of jumped the shark. Just leave the original alone.
Yeah.
Now, you rewrote a verse to that song, I'd Rather Lead a Band, which I have to say, kudos to you, either Loudon or Vince, because it takes some balls to rewrite a lyric by Irving Berlin. But I think that the Berlin catalog is now controlled by the Rodgers and Hammerstein Company, and they're notoriously protective of their catalog. Is it difficult to convince them to let you change a Berlin lyric?
Well, we didn't ask them. We just did it.
Okay.
So, if they come after me, we'll get some publicity out of it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's easier to apologize than to ask.
Exactly.
Just say, oh, gee, we didn't know.
Now, there's another Berlin tune on this album, The Little Things in Life, that was written, I think, in 1930 at the height of the Great Depression. I found it so refreshing to revisit the music of that era at this particular moment with the pandemic and so much uncertainty, financial and otherwise. Do you think that there's something that those of us today can take away from the music and maybe the attitude of the people in that generation?
Well, as you say, it's been a hell of a time this year the last few years, let's say. And I think one of the things that popular music tries to do is lift people's spirits. And that this music was written, you know, at the time of the Depression and when things were really bad and spirits needed to be lifted. And I like to think that when people hear our record, you know, that it'll make them smile and feel good and get up and want to dance, you know, and that would be a wonderful thing. Let's hope that happens.
Yeah. And these songs are just so timeless and so wonderful. And I guess the 20s to the 30s, maybe really the 50s, was the sweet spot for the Great American Songbook, when composers like Irving Berlin or Gershwin, Rodgers and Hart, Cole Porter, Johnny Mercer composed songs that we're still singing today. It feels to me that there's no one who is writing those kind of standards anymore. Or I don't know, maybe is it that we still have to wait to see decades down the line what holds up? Because I can think of the songs from my generation in the 80s, and I can't think of anything that I would consider a cross-generational classic like these.
Yeah, it's the expression, time will tell. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll see if I think that the Beatles, you know, at the end of the day, that music will last. It's mm-hmm. tuneful and well written and lyrically and musically, and of course those records are wonderful records. So I'm not going to be surprised if people are listening to the Beatles.
Yeah.
Maybe the Rolling Stones.
Or Loud and Wainwright the Third.
Maybe Bob Dylan. I don't know.
But it is an interesting time now because, you know, in those days, they were writing songs that everyone in the household liked and could agree on, as opposed to now or from the 60s on, or really from the 50s on, I guess. Teens listen to something totally different from their parents to their grandparents to their sister in college to their five-year-old brother. But these songs are cross-generational. And I wonder what happened to that. I mean, how did our musical tastes become so balkanized?
I think just the times changed. You know, the music was a reflection of the times and the times reflection of the music. Someone mm-hmm. said, I don't take credit for that. And I agree. I mean, it's like looking at 1950s TV. And then what we have today, or listening to old-time radio shows, and say, wow, yeah, a lot has changed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and all of these songs really do stand up to the test of time, but the song that I found to be the most timeless is a tune called A Perfect Day. Let's hear a little of that one.
When you come to the end of a perfect day, and you sit alone with your thoughts, while the chimes ring out with a carol gay for the joy that the day has brought.
Again, that was Loudon Wainwright III and Vince Giordano and his Nighthawks Orchestra performing A Perfect Day. This is a song that was written in 1910, more than 100 years ago, and yet the melody is so sweet and the lyrics are so universal. I could easily imagine an indie folk singer doing a cover of this song today, and it wouldn't feel out of place at all.
That's a great song. It's in a Barbara Stanwyck, a Fred McMurray movie from the 40s, or called Remember the Night, which is a kind of cheerful Christmas goofy caper romance, not at all like a Double Indemnity, their other great movie. Right. But at one point, Sterling Holloway, the great character actor, who also did voiceovers for Walt Disney, sings that... Cary Jacobs Bond wrote the words to that song. I can't recall the name of the guy that it was a hymn, really. Isn't that right, Vince, that it was a hymn?
No, I think it was just a popular song. It's very hymn-like. And she was probably the first successful woman songwriter and publisher on this song. It was like 25 million copies of sheet music sold. So it a lot of people liked it. So you can join the club there.
Yeah. And Loudon, you're well known as a singer and a songwriter, but I find it so interesting that most of these songs on this album were written by non-performers. And it's hard to think back to a time when a person could just be a composer and still be a household name. Irving Berlin, Rodgers and Hart, Cole Porter, all of these guys were every bit as famous as Frank Sinatra or Bing Crosby or any of the singers who performed their songs. Now, I hate to keep sounding like an old fogey here, but if pressed, I'm not sure that I could name a straight-up composer today.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they're out there.
I'm sure they are, but we don't know their name.
And the guys, you know, if you go to the 50s, even the guys who started out in the Brill Building, you know, later became performers like Neil Sedaka and what's his name? The Diamond guy. What's his name?
Neil Diamond.
Neil Diamond. I blanked on Neil Diamond's name. You know, those guys and Carole King, of course. I mean, they started out as they, you know, they followed in the footsteps of some of the people we're talking about. But then they, sure enough, they went out in front of audiences and started to play their songs.
I wonder, what do you think is the best known song that's on this album? One that people, I mean, well, you do have Heart and Soul, which everyone knows from piano lessons when they're 5 years old. But right. which one do you think is the most famous song?
What do you think, Vince?
Well, there's quite a few. Ain't Misbehavin' or My Blue Heaven. I mean, that was a big, big hit. A lot of people have covered that song over the years. And Benny Goodman and Coleman Hawkins and even Fats Domino. It's had a lot of life and people like it. I used to play it with Leon Redbone and people would sing along to it. And
You Rascal You, I think that's pretty famous. Everyone's done that. It seems like Fats Waller, Cab Calloway, Louis Armstrong, Louis Prima. So
yeah.
Yeah, what a great song.
Pushing the envelope a little bit there, but
right.
Yeah, but it's good. We need that. We need a little,
yeah,
you know, to contrast the other songs that we have.
I'm not in the music business, but I have to assume that you put a lot of thought into the order in which these songs are laid out on this album.
I think we did put a lot of thought into it. I mean, I'm an old fashioned guy, and I like the idea of someone sitting down. Or getting in their car and putting the CD in, if they have a CD player in their car, of course. But you know, sitting down and listening to the whole thing, or actually getting a vinyl record and listening to half of it, and then getting up and flipping the record. I think a sequence is important, certainly to me. I know that young people don't necessarily listen to music that way now, but that's what I like. I like the idea of a kind of sonic journey of 50 minutes or however long the record is. That's a satisfying concept to me.
I also feel like I missed out because I listened to this on Spotify, and I have to think, if I had the CD or the album, there must be some really great liner notes to this one.
There are great liner notes, and I wrote them.
Oh, you did? Oh man, I did miss out.
We'll have to get you that. I'll send you a Word document of the liner notes.
Oh, I love it. I would love that, because I love hearing the stories behind these songs and what motivates artists. And now you don't get that, you know, with Spotify, Apple Music, and all these things. They never have digital liner notes. Yeah. So we really miss out.
We miss the LPs for that. But this record did come out on an LP also. So
it's great.
And stretch out and read a lot of stuff that Loudon wrote. It's great.
Terrific. See, now I'm a little bit like you, Vince. I haven't quite gotten into the LP thing yet and collecting records and having a proper record player, but I do have an old gramophone that plays 78s. So,
you'll catch up. You'll catch up soon.
Yeah, one day. You have another great old tune from the big band era on here. It's a Jimmy Van Heusen and Johnny Mercer tune called I Thought About You. Let's listen to that.
Seems that I read, or somebody said, that out of sight is out of mind. Maybe that's so, but I tried to go and leave you behind. What did I find? I took a trip on the train and I thought about you. I passed a shadowy lane and I thought about you. Two or three cars parked under the stars, a winding stream. Moon shining down on some little town, and with each beam, same old dream. At every stop that we made, oh, I thought about you. When I pulled down the shade, then I really felt blue. I peeked through the crack and looked at the track, the one going back to you. And what did I do? I thought about you.
Man, what a beautiful song. They just don't write them like that anymore. Now, I was thinking that I was going to surprise you, but Vince, you probably already know this story, but Johnny Mercer actually wrote the lyrics while he was on a train to Chicago, and that was what inspired it. Now, I'm sure that you probably know that, don't you?
No, that's new to me. That's the wonderful thing about this genre of music and all the stories. You bring more and more and different ones, and there's a lot for me to learn, and I've been researching for 50 years now, and I'm like, wow, this is great.
Wow. Well, I feel like you're probably just being kind, but if not, I feel very, very self-satisfied that I was able to teach you something that you didn't already know here.
There's a lot I'm learning. I'm still learning.
Well, all of these songs, as we mentioned, with the exception of the song that was written in 1910, were from the 20s and 30s, with the other exception being More I Cannot Wish You, which is a great tune from Frank Lesser's Guys and Dolls. Loudon, what made you want to stretch the time boundaries enough to include this one?
Well, I've been singing that song for 20 years, and I mentioned that my dad's record collection. I mean, and Guys and Dolls, the original cast album of Guys and Dolls was a record that was just played over and over in our house. And of course, More I Cannot Wish You is the song that people forget about the show, but it's a wonderful, sentimental kind of Irishy almost ballad. That an old guy singing to young people. So it was perfect for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just loved every tune on this one. And there were quite a few that I hadn't heard of. I like to think that I'm pretty well versed in the standards, and I'd say about half of these were ones that I wasn't familiar with. So particularly the Ukulele Ike songs. And it strikes me that this must be a weird time to release an album, because typically the way it goes is you put out a new album and then you go on tour. And traditionally, that's where a lot of musicians make most of their money, doing those live shows. You obviously can't do that right now. Do you guys miss touring and performing for an audience?
Yes. In fact, we were slated to do a couple of gigs, one at the Carlisle in New York and a couple of jazz clubs up in Boston. And I'm sure Loudon can fill in. And, we had them penciled in and get the eraser out. This, it's kind of unfortunate, but thanks to folks like you here talking about it, and people will search it out and either download it or buy it from the company.
Yeah. And maybe if things get better, we can get out there and perform the songs live again. Vince in New York has a regular gig Do you think they're going to have you back at the Iguana, Vince?
I hope the Iguana survives,
Yeah.
I've seen so many different clubs that are, gone. But I call them, about every couple of weeks, and they said, everything is good. So knock on wood, the Iguana will be our home base, and hopefully we'll have Loudon come up and sing a few with us and promote.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. Yeah, I mean, nightclubs, they must be having it even harder than restaurants these days, I imagine.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, I earn my living playing in little clubs. And I've been putting out some virtual shows, of my songs, that I record on my phone, basically, and then send out. But, we not only had we planned to do some gigs, at the Carlisle or wherever we could, within striking distance of New York City, we talked about, having people dance, having some actual dancers, because this music was written to be danced to.
True.
And it's Vince's band is one of the great dance bands around. So hopefully people will be cutting a rug sometime soon to this music.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And as much as I love the Carlisle, what a great space that is, but there's not a lot of room for dancing in there, I guess.
Right.
Not much of a dance floor place.
Not when you put an 11-piece band and Loudon in front of us.
It's right.
But that's okay, you know.
Yeah.
As long as people dance in their minds.
Yeah. Now, Loudon, you're, of course, the patriarch of one of the great musical families. Your children, Rufus and Martha, have their own successful music careers. I don't know how close you guys live to each other, but have you seen much of them during the pandemic?
Well, we're kind of spread out. Martha lives up in Montreal, and Rufus is out in L.A., and I'm on Long Island. So,
okay.
But we, you know, speaking of virtual shows, Rufus and Martha and my daughter Lucy Wainwright Roach, who is also a fabulous musician, the three of them are doing a virtual Christmas show on December 20th.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going to, you know, participate, and everybody's doing their things from their various locations. So people should check that out too.
How fun. How about you, Vince? Aside from promoting the album, what's keeping you busy during quarantine?
Well,
rifling through your collection.
Yeah. Going through my collection and taking the old scores, and I put them in this program called Sibelius, which is like Finale or Cakewalk or these things, and you're able to hear the whole orchestration. I don't have to have the band there. Huh. Can then adapt it, change keys, put in little hot solos, and you know, still keeping it in the same period. So I'll never get through all these charts that I have here. And then I've been outside doing some projects. I like to try to be handy with things. The main thing, keep busy. That's
definitely
what I try. Folks, keep busy, find something fun to do. And whether it's books, I mean, I heard Loudon was reading books. But tell me the books you were reading, Loudon.
I'm on a Charles Dickens jag.
Wow.
I've written the last 8 months, I've read seven Charles Dickens books. I'm in the process of finishing up Little Dorrit.
Little Dorrit. Okay, that's a deep cut. That one I don't remember.
No, that guy was something. That guy was.
Yeah, and he's no small project when you open a Dickens book.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that when we come out of this whole thing that I'll have a chance to see you guys perform live. That would just be a real treat. In the meantime, once again, the album is called I'd Rather Lead a Band. Loudon Wainwright III and Vince Giordano, thanks so much for talking with me.
All right, Ben, thank you.
Thanks so much for having us. Keep doing what you're doing.
Music, I can wish you merry music when you're young, and wisdom when your hair is turned to gray. But more I cannot wish you than to wish you find your love, your own true love this day. With the sheep's eye and the licorice tooth and the strong arms to carry you away.
That was More I Cannot Wish You from Loudon Wainwright III and Vince Giordano's wonderful new album called I'd Rather Lead a Band. You can listen to it on iTunes or Spotify, or on Amazon, where you can also order it as a CD or LP with those lovely liner notes that we were just talking about. Keep up with Loudon Wainwright at lw3.com, and keep up with Vince Giordano at vincegiordano.com. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.